so it's a perfectly circular orbit directly over the equator at a very specific longitude, and you've got to stay within something like a 1 cubic mile of that longitude. You leave your 1 cubic mile square, and you're quite possibly going to run into somebody else's satellite. You're violating somebody else's territory. So for the hams to do that, as I see it, is a pretty tall order. Do you know of any amateur radio, European or American, any hemisphere amateur radio operations that are about to try to do that in the near future? WS2N, K2RIW.
I don't know of any up there now that are doing that. There might be one, but I don't know. I think it was just transmitting or something. Maybe one of the digital modes, or it was something. About 6 months or a year ago, and I'm not sure about it. It definitely wasn't this country. Probably Germany or Japan or something. But I guess you could look on the AMSAT website, probably find that information. The closest thing that we almost had was the Bates Bridge satellite, probably in the 90s. And that was put on a Molinar orbit. It would go out, maybe 30,000 miles or something, and then it would drop back down. So it hung out in the same spot, space for roughly around 11 hours, and then coming close to the Earth. And, it's elliptical, very elliptical. And maybe it was going around the Earth, inside of 45 minutes or something, and then it would go out into this long orbit. We call it a Molinar orbit, and that was probably launched by one of the Russian satellites. And that thing did not function properly. Oh, QSD used to have write-ups on the Phase 3 satellite they called it. And after it went up, they gave it a name, an Oscar number, whatever it was, I don't remember. That's the closest thing that we ever had. That would have been good. It would have been the same spot, I think, every 3 days or something like that. You would know every third day or something. If you were down to a system, you'd be able to work that satellite.
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
Something malfunction. Drop it. And I'm going to have this conversation on email. My email, by the way, if anybody wants to contact me, spacenetreport@gmail.com. I think I've got that out before. Dick, over to you, K2RIWS2N.
Dick, a comment on those satellites?
You got it, Rich.
Okay, Dick, yeah, there were two, actually three, Oscar 10 and Oscar 13. Which lasted quite a while. I think the way you pronounce it, Melania orbit, the Russians, I believe, came up with that idea, where they go in very close and then shoot up over the North Pole very, very high up. I was at Barry's house a number of years ago when 10 and 13 were up, and it was wonderful. I mean, you could just literally put your feet up on the table, and he had friends that he regularly talked to in Australia. It wasn't like he says fly by Leo's, where you can only work the guy for 5 minutes. You'd be on for hours and hours, and every few minutes you'd have to bump the rotator just a little bit to keep it within the ballpark of the satellite. But it was very, very nice. Then the French launched something called Orsine. Unfortunately, there was a problem with Orsine, and it didn't last long. I don't know what the problem was, but it went dead. Yeah, Dick, and to Rio.
The original Molinia orbit was invented for satellite television reception for the Russian population. This orbit was a 24-hour repetitive orbit. We're right at prime time. Let me pick a number, like 9 p.m. at night, local time in Russia. The satellite would be in its highly elliptical orbit, going near geosynchronous altitude, quite far north of the equator. You could say it was right over Russia, and it was transmitting satellite television, and it would dwell in that position for quite a number of hours. The nice thing about any highly elliptical orbit is that by Kepler's, I guess it's second law, I think it's Kepler's second law, you sweep equal area for equal time. That's what the orbit does do. So the portions of your orbit where you're at apogee, very high altitude, you move very slowly, you dwell there for a long time. And then the backside of the orbit, it comes down to the perigee and moves very rapidly. Well, it takes that part of the orbit at high noon, so to speak, when no one's watching television. But late at night, everybody's watching television for long periods of time. That's why that orbit was originally invented. And the orbit, when it's set up, it was just the right altitude, ellipticity, declination, whatever. When you get all the parameters just right, the orbit slowly precesses once per 365 days. So in other words, the orbit slowly moves around as the Earth moves around the Sun, and therefore it appears to keep doing the exact same thing every single day for the whole year, if you know what I mean. Very nicely designed orbit. And so amateurs have from time to time talked about assembling...
Repeater, time out.
The amateurs have talked about doing one of those, and I think you're saying the French did it for a short period of time. Is that true, Rich, N2EO, K2LAW?
Sure, I think it was called Arsine. I think it was spelled A-R-S-I-N-E, and the French put it up, but we did two of them here. And South America put two of them up, Oscar 10 and Oscar 13. And I believe they were launched from French Guiana.
Refresh our memory, Rich. Oscar 10 and Oscar 13. From your recollection, how long were they operational? And was this a 2 meter up, 440 back down operation? Go ahead.
It's getting a little fuzzy in my mind. But they were two up, 440 down, 1296. 435 down, 2 meters up, a lot of different modes. Talk to Barry, he built a patch antenna. You know what a patch antenna is. And he ran it into a dish because this gave him two 432 and 1296.
And I think that that feed horn was really a multiple stacked patch. Each one of these square-like radiators, parallel to a ground plane, was approximately a half wavelength in dimension. So you can stack one above the other. The bottom one would be the 2 meter one, the next one would be the 440, and the next one would be the 1296, so to speak. Set that up correctly, and it's a multiple simultaneous frequency feed horn. And did Barry put that in front of his 28-foot dish when that was operational in his backyard? Over to you, Rich.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think he had it on a 28-foot dish. He had it on something else. I don't remember what it was on, but yes, he's correct. He made them out of circular discs, 2, 432, and 1296. And those satellites were terrific. The nice thing about them is you could make friends and you could work them every night. It was predictable.
It sure is nice to have a slow-moving satellite where you can have a real rag chew. The very early Oscar satellites were low-Earth orbit satellites. If you happen to be lucky so that the pass really went straight over your house, horizon to horizon was something like 18 minutes. You had to talk real fast. And the mutual window between you and somebody else far away was nowhere near 18 minutes. It might be like 4 minutes. So in 4 minutes, you've got to establish the QSO, pass your information back and forth so it's officially recognized, and it's almost a hello goodbye, which during contest operation, hello goodbye QSOs are tolerable. But for the rest of the year, human beings, and particularly amateurs, are communicators. Obvious by the fact that someone told me there was this net where people pass information back and forth for 4 separate hours every single Sunday night. Hams are communicators. They want to really chew the fat, so to speak, but really pass information. What's the word I'm looking for here? Tap into each other's brain, pick each other's brain, and really pass information back and forth. It takes some time to do that. Hello, goodbye, QSOs are okay. The thing that I... Let me drop this. Boombox ham radio is very exciting. But unless you're willing to put up a lot of hardware, really big antenna, real high power transmitter, and a really state-of-the-art low noise figure receiver on the front end of it, unless you're willing to do that, the vast majority of Moonbounce is very, very weak Morse code. And you're happy to pass back and forth call letters, signal report, and 73s. Please send me your card. And you do that exclusively as ham radio for the next year, and you're not really having a QSO with somebody. You're not really passing information back and forth. And yes, I'm recognizing that weak signal in the noise. I know who you are, but we're not really having a rag shoe. And the guys who get into Moonbound, my suggestion to them is make sure you're doing other kinds of ham radio at the same time. If you do nothing but Moonbound, and you have these non-conversation contacts, my word for it, you can easily get discouraged saying that hey, it's time I go on and do something else. Maybe I'll take up fishing or horseback riding or golf, if you know what I mean. At least I can talk to people. Anybody got any further questions for Paul during our space report section of the TechNet, please give me a call at us right now. You're allowed to ask anything you want. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hey, Dick, WS. Just want to bring up the reason for the Russians to come up with that mile in our orbit.
Yeah, I thought it was in order to supply satellite television to their population during the prime times. As I thought was the invention. If this is the best of all worlds, you'd like to put a geosynchronous orbit directly above your country. Well, when your country is that far north, when your population is that far north of the equator, you can't make an orbit there. Synchronous orbit, really ordinary synchronous orbit, is over the equator. Well, the equator is very far south of where some of the population of Russia lives. So therefore, that Malinia orbit did give them a pretty good solution. So, were there other reasons for it, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW?
Yeah, that's right. They couldn't, from their location, they can't launch geosynchronous orbit satellites, so they have to come up with something. And interesting to know, that's the reason the International Space Station is where it is today was because the Russians, the best they could do, I think, at the time was 51 degrees or something for the space station. You know, if we had it our way, Florida is like 20 degrees or something. We would have left it in the 20 degree area and closer to the equator. We could have actually put more cargo up. We would have had a lot more, you know, energy because the lower the inclination, the more speed you actually have, you know, in the direction that you want to go to put something in orbit. But we went with the higher inclination because the Mir spacecraft, Mir space station was put in that orbit, and we became part of that. We sent the shuttle up to the Mir some of those days. From there, we went to the International Space Station. So that's a quick history on why the Russians wound up the way they did. Yes, TV was number one. That's probably more important for everybody. Thank you, Dick.
Yeah, I've had various kinds of satellite television for a while. TVRO, the television receive only terminal, by way of your typical 10-foot dish on S-band and KU-band. Does give you numbers like 400 channels to watch, and some of those channels in the early days were very interesting, what I call raw material, to watch the news feeds, where you're sending a news reporter to some crazy place in the world where an event is taking place, and he's, by way of a satellite uplink, sending the information back before it gets edited, and you watch those news feeds before they get edited. Quite often the information you see is quite different than the final product. Quite often the final product is modified in such a way where he who does the editing is changing it in the way that he thinks the public wants to see the news. And news, by the way, quite a bit of news really is entertainment, even though you may not think it is. And that's how it becomes profit-making. It really is entertainment for the population. And on a number of occasions, the final story differed so much from the raw feed that I was kind of amazed. And there were times when you would see very interesting things, like when Peter Jennings was stationed in Reykjavik, Iceland, during the Khrushchev meeting with Reagan. The conversations they had while they were sitting outside of that little White House, I'm talking about the news reporters, transmitting information back to their headquarters because they weren't going live because the settlement hadn't yet taken place. And the conversations they had, some of those were very interesting. Other things took place.
Repeater, timeout.
Other things took place. That if I have private conversations with you guys, I could tell you more about it. It's not quite appropriate for over the air. But they had to wait around for many hours, hoping that some form of settlement would take place, which it did not. So watching some of those news feeds live and watching the things that they encounter, to me, was interesting. Not everybody feels that way. So that's what you had with a TVRO. By way of the 18-inch dish, you've also got an awful lot of satellites to watch, which in the early days was a lot of fun, but now it's all encrypted. You've got to buy the service. So if you want all of those channels, it can become kind of expensive. As such, I've got towers, I've got enough altitude. I'm the one human being in my town that has over-the-air television watching. There's 26,000 people in my town, and one guy has an operating television aerial at his location, me. So I can watch television from Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and when this band opening quite a bit further. Both me and John, Joe, W-A-2-R-Y-Y, we enjoy television DXing, watching television from long distances away. And I'm going to get a little bit more serious than that, just as something to tinker with. It's kind of interesting. Digital television, unfortunately, has a lot smaller range than it was originally intended. Let me drop it. In the early days, when we switched over from analog to digital, we were promised we're going to have the exact same range, higher quality, and more channels. We do have, to some degree, higher quality and more channels. Unfortunately, a lot less range. And so, the total number of people in my neighborhood who used to watch over-the-air television and no longer do, and many of these people are paying numbers like $150 and $200 a month for their television cable service. And I can afford it, but my pride would be hurt. I mean, I have the ability to put up antennas and towers and altitude, and so to pay somebody to supply to me that which used to be free, over-the-air broadcast television, I'm just reluctant to pay for it. I'm not a big sports fan. If I really wanted the sports channels, yes, I would have to pay for it because there's no other way to get them. Okay. What's the latest with Wes? Let's see now. Should you give us an introduction first, John, or should we go straight to Wes? KC2WGB, your suggestion. K2RIW and the TechNet.
KC2WGB. out there, Dick, guys, if you should let him pick it up. And, he might have a question.
I would like to know how am I coming out.
You're coming out rather well. Please proceed. And what's the latest breakthrough in Queens? To the laboratory in Queens. Over to you, Wes.
There is a part that is being called canopy. And the second word that is pretty much familiar is hemp. So we have two words that are pretty much known and pretty much restricted, not as a name, but as a conduct. So let's talk about that in terms of semiconductors. And eventually, some rumors and the revelations that we have in here about Malaysian Airlines, the first plane that it got went missing. So the hemp may come back in U.S. after decades of ban on its cultivation. Scientists are reporting that fibers from the plant can pack as much energy and power as graphene, long suited as the model material for the supercapacitors and semiconductors. One would ask the question, why? We should have get closer look at the materials that makes up 200 semiconductors. Eventually, what is so magic in hemp? More than half of the 600 cannabis related patents registered to the United Nations Global Intellectual Property Agency belongs to Chinese companies. And there is a company called Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company that is principally engaged in the research and development, manufacturing, and distribution of integrated circuit related products. But it starts about $17 for a rapidly growing up. And a little bit more information, the International Medical Veritas Association, IMVA, is putting hemp oil on its cancer protocol. This prioritized protocol list where we have a top five items, and that would magnesium chloride, iodine, and selenium. And you guys, the old guys, remember the selenium rectifiers? Now it rings the bell. And we have alpha liponic acid and sodium biocarbonate. It makes the perfect sense to drop hemp oil right into the middle of the nutritional crossfire, anti-cancer medicines, which are available without prescription. Malaysia Airlines, Flight 370. That's the rumor. And that's the message. So we're talking about the rumor. So it's a kind of puzzle. There was a Malaysian airline, the first one, who went somewhere in the ocean, and nobody was knowing why. 4 days after missing flight MH370, a patent is approved by the patent office. And that patent belongs to the semiconductor company. The semiconductor company got pretty close look and investment in POT technology, supposedly related to semiconductors. Patent holders are Chinese employees, Freescale Semiconductor of Austin, Texas. pattern is divided on 20% increments, increment for five holders. Phase one show China 20%. Zhou Qing show China 20%. Zhink Cheng show China 20%. Zhink Yong show China 20%. And pre-scale semiconductor 20%. If button holder dies, then the remaining holders equally share the dividends of the disease in not distributed in will. If four of the five dies, then the remaining patent holder gets 100% of the wealth of the patent. The remaining life patent holder is Freescale Semiconductor. So who is the owner of Freescale Semiconductor? Mr. Rothschild, Jacob Rothschild, through Blackstone, who owns Freescale. He is possible motive for the missing Beijing plane. As all of the four Chinese members of the department were passengers of the missing plane, patent holders can alter the proceeds legally by passing wealth to theirs. However, not until the patent is approved. So the patent was approved 4 days after the missing plane. So Mr. Rothschild, based on the rumor, gets 100% of the patent once patent holders are declared deceased. Direct to the link to that particular patent, and surprisingly to me, I was looking at thousands of patents in my life. I found only one page of it. The patent number is 8671381B1. March 11, 2014. Now, the question would be, are we talking about overlooked source of unlimited electrical energy, and how come that comes right now to the electrical energy? Well, carbon structure using semiconductors could be made based on that particular part. But also, the battery could be produced based on that particular part. So that's the part of the rumor. Now we have a Rothschild company that is primary semiconductor company that is investing in parts. And we know that selenium is one of the materials that is semiconductor material that is made by this part. And to it here. Is that a question? Oh, that's a good question. Now, I'm giving you a short brief about the rumor. But this rumor contains a certain factor. The factor is the material. And I've got that information because there is an information that says that this particular material could become a material for the semiconductors, but the cost would be hundreds of times less expensive. So the question would be, do we have any reason to believe in all of this rumor? Also the question is, do we have medical marijuana or eventually before that, any restriction to it, to that, anyhow related to that? And I remember that when I was reading about the Second World War, this particular drug or this particular material was widely used in synthetics and in clothing and in semiconductors as well. And nobody had a problem with it. And so it's here.
I, for one, have
don't have much information on this subject, Wes. So I don't have anything I can contribute. John, KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Truthfully, Dick, I don't understand the question. He's talking like maybe some kind of conspiracy, but I'm not sure.
So let me rephrase that. It struck me, and it was roughly like a half an hour ago, when I got the information about the possibility of semiconductor technology being based on this material, and that would be cannabis, because that material makes selenium, and selenium was used for semiconductors, it's pretty much smart. So we may enter into the era where semiconductor technology would be 100 times cheaper than it is right now. So that was one thing that strikes me. I'm trying to get, brother, your response to that, what I'm saying. Eventually, maybe somebody would be interested to dig in it. And the second thing is, it is puzzling that if there is two Rothschild companies invest in a Chinese company that is a primary semiconductor company, and then all of the members of the patent supposedly died in that Malaysian plane, and 100% of that patent now becomes belongs to Rothschild. That's my understanding, which might be wrong. That is, if Rothschild invests money, that means it must be a right investment. Are we going to the revolution in semiconductor theory? What do you think about organic materials or bio materials being used as semiconductors? And to explain.
When it comes to new materials, graphene looks like it has a lot of capability. But the other materials you're talking about, I don't have any experience. For the time being, I don't even have any opinions. I'm going to pass it over to you, John, KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick. Well, the way I'm looking at it, first of all, if the element needed to produce semiconductors costs X, and we say we sell the product for $2, okay. If we find another product that's half X, that doesn't mean it's going to go to a dollar. It's such a minuscule amount in the total production and setup, and I don't see it affecting the price of semiconductors that much. The manufacturer of semiconductors finding that a windfall, unless I'm misunderstanding that, Dick. Is that true? Would that affect the yield versus gain?
It might be a little bit like what goes on with the refinement of gasoline. If the price of a barrel of oil changed by 20%, obviously it doesn't mean that the price you and I pay at the pump is going to change by 20%, because a high percentage of what we pay is state tax, federal tax, the process of doing the refinement. All of those are fixed costs, so to speak, and the price of the barrel of oil is somewhat minor. So I think that's what you're saying when it comes to the semiconductor materials. If somebody has organic or any other kind of unusual semiconductor material that has high enough performance and it's simultaneously cheaper, or maybe even a little bit lower in performance, but cheaper, is that going to create a revolution in semiconductor products? Right now, I think you and I are not convinced it will. Over to you, John.
Yeah, Dick, I agree with that. I think I don't know what Wesley's trying to interpret out of the information he has, but that's how I see it. The product involves so much processing that that small amount in the actual cost of the semiconductor material, I don't think would affect the price much at all. But I don't know. Let's see what comes up with next. Back to you, Dick.
Let me add something, please. There is a photosynthesis that's how I understand that, although I got to go deeper into it. So we have one possible application of this particular material as a semiconductor material that is cheaper, because making that material is just growing the plant. But also, due to the photosynthesis, this material can store enormous amount of the energy and could be used as the batteries. So we have two possible applications and versions.
Do you intend to be involved in this process in the future, Wes? Or right now you're reading the material, you're reading the patents, and just recognizing that something interesting is taking place, and the Malaysian airline loss does at first look like it's overly coincidental. Is that sort of what you're saying?
Yeah, we may look at it as solely coincidental that we have Mr. Rothschild, and he's now the sole owner of all of the rights, not only to the company, but to the PAX technology that is being utilized for the electronics, maybe for the batteries. That may be coincidental. The only problem that I have is then I look at the patent and I found the patent. The patent has about 20 claims. The claims are not available. And also, the patent has, if I remember, 54 pages. I see only front page of it, and the one drawing. And that somehow is, for me, unusual. For the past 4 years, I was looking at about 3,500 apartments. And to exceed.
That's a lot of patents. And I think Einstein did work for a patent office, had a chance to read a lot of patents. There are some people who believe all of the reading of those patents gave him a lot of information that helped him do some of his future work. So, are you attempting to go down a similar road, Wes? Go ahead.
Well, when you have enough of the financial resources, you can have the people working like Mr. Einstein, who was just a worker, and he was able to take in somebody's thought. And then it gives him an idea, which is nothing wrong. But when you operate in the environment where you not really see the money in it, the best of all is keep up to one subject only. I'm going to give you one example. The United States of America didn't make too many of the experiments with the political and economical system, and this is why we have the best power in the world. As Russia, that has a population extremely well educated, at least for the last 50 years, with the good schools, really cannot do that. So what I'm saying is they have made so many different experiments. And when I spoke to some of the German scientists, they say, keep it to one subject only. You don't have the money, you don't have too many tools. Make your lab only for one operation. If you don't finish, nothing lost. Your brain is richer for what you've learned. But if you finish, let me know, and I'm going to help you out. Thank you, XCS. My understanding is that because the information is only like 40 minutes old that I've got, and I just to dig in it. Definitely, I would love to find out what is so special in this particle material, which is cannabis, that makes it store so much of the energy and could be used for the batteries. Why is so little information on the net about this technology? What possibly made the company, made the Rothschild to invest money in into Chinese company of semiconductors and concentrate on pot technology, which actually wouldn't be pot technology, but pot material? Find out how much of the selenium is in cannabis, would that be cheaper to grow selenium instead of just the typical technology of it? Trying to find out the rest of missing pages of that patent. Yes, definitely, it is for me absolutely unusual, unless I was digging too short for it, but I have never met one single patent that I cannot get the full patent of it. And of course, it's a rumor. That might be a coincidence about my that rumor about Mr. Rothschild. But, you know, I don't care. It's not my business what the rich people do. I don't want to create a conspiracy theory in here. I'm just relating on the common factors. That's how the logic works. John, pick up.
KC2WGB. All right. Well, I do know one thing. As we spoke last week, in fact, I think it was Rothschild, the richest family in the world. Counting everybody, they are the richest family in the world. They are very shrewd and very wise investors. Now, maybe they see something they're investing in, but I don't follow that connection or, you know, thread any beads on a string from it. He sees a chance to make money that I believe, and he would move forward on it, absolutely. But what I know, I've heard of a new battery technology. I think it was on the amateur radio news line about a new battery that's going to replace all of these silly batteries we have, like lithium, with nanotube batteries. So now maybe they're talking about using that to create nanotubes, something like that, but I've never heard of them trying to use the pot to produce selenium to make something out of it. That's news to me. But the Rothschilds, yeah, I think that's a good move. That's probably something you should bet on. Dick?
Where the page is missing from the patent certainly sounds unusual. Can you tell that the pages are missing because of the page numbers and the paragraph numbers? Most patents have page numbers and paragraph numbers. And I guess there are some kinds of patents that are restricted because of confidentiality or secrecy. I don't think this falls into that category. How many pages are missing? And you're fairly sure that there's no way of getting those pages. When it comes to open literature, getting your hands on patents, there's multiple websites by which you can do it, not just one. Have you tried one of the others that are Westgrad?
Well, roughly, the patent is is about the dyes to fabricate the wafer. That's all. Well, we took you for the material. And we have a 54 pages, is what I understand. Okay, we have a number 54, system of optimizing. We have number 71, applicants. And then, yes, we have applicants, and there are the names that were listed in that rumor. And we have SIME, not an investor, just SIME, Freescale Semiconductor Incorporated, Austin, Texas, U.S. And then we have a notice, subject to any disclaimer, the term of this patent is extended for just under 35 U.S.C. 154B by 0 days. The date matches, so date of the patent is March 11, 2014. So everything, and I see the abstract, and just one drawing, which is the circle with the grid on it. No explanation, no nothing. 24 times, 11 drawing sheets. That's what it says. No drawings, no clients. Enter a GM.
What got you to zero in on this patent in the first place, Wes?
One of the ham radio operators in Poland says that there was a guy named Milton, M-I-T-L-I-N, I didn't check that yet. He made the method of hydrothermal synthesis. I'm trying to translate from Polish into English. And separating lignin and hemicellulose, he's able from cannabis, right? He's able to make a two-dimensional nanostructure that uses that is made out of the synthesis of atoms of graphite. So it's pretty much close to graphene, I understand that. And then it is being used right now to create a new superconductors from those nanotubes of cannabis. Let me go further. Those might be more popular from graphene, and the cost of the production would be hundreds times lesser than the cost of the production of graphene. And he says that that kind of material could be very much used for manufacturing. So then, that was in Polish, and I immediately, when you were great talking, I was having a different subject to discuss, but then I said, hey, I got to look at it, and quickly I was cruising over the internet, and so now we have a nanostructure, nanotubes, we have a selenium in it. We have a rumor about Malaysian plane that went down. We have the names of the people who were on that patent, who died. And then we have a wealthy guy who is the 100% owner of the patent. And then I cannot find the pages of the patent. Enter a fear.
Okay. When you brought this material to the TechNet tonight, Wes, did you have an expectation that any of the people present would be able to contribute, make suggestions, create understanding? A very severe question I can ask is, what did you expect? How would you risk?
There's a very fine group of the people listening to this message for almost 32 years. And once I decided 4 years ago that everything I'm doing is going to be dedicated to the people and no secrets at all, when I get the new information and I'm just alone, whether I'm wrong or right, it is just me. When I share the information with that audience, there are few very much intelligent and very much eager to for the new things, guys from Canada. There is a very fine crew of the people in here in New York, as well as the people on the internet that listen to that. And of course, my expectation would be, guys, dig in it, find what I'm wrong in, find what I'm right in, find more about it, because if we reaching the point at which we have a Morse's law expanding rapidly, it would be really not smart just to forget about it. Now, the rumor might be right, the rumor might be wrong, but just simple logic, for the people that are not Rothschilds or Rothschilds, how you say, in here, there must be something that makes this guy invest in this technology. But also there is another name, and that name of the company is Blackwater, hold on, Blackstone. So I didn't check Blackstone, but it looks for me like a military technology or military organization, Blackstone. So Rothschild to Blackstone, who owns Freescale. So Freescale now is owned by Blackstone, and owner of Blackstone is Rothschild. And to Exia.
I'm right now of the opinion that the subject matter is fairly far left of center of what we normally discuss. And I don't know if many people here have experience in the area that you're asking about. Maybe I'm misjudging. Or what do you think, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW?
KC2WGB. No, I believe, unfortunately, you're right, Dick. I don't think anybody... I mean, first of all, Wesley is one who follows this type of stuff. Very few people do. And he only learned it 40 minutes ago. So it's kind of a useless topic right now.
Yeah, I believe, guys, you're right. It is just the first emotion. It is something that has happened. It is just me trying to put all of the pieces in the puzzle in my head and see if there was any previous historically the connection to it. We had this material pretty much widely used in the whole world. All of a sudden, we have restriction of it. All of a sudden, we have a two new possible devices, which would be the battery, and that would be the semiconductors. And then we have some kind of rumor. But yes, I just brought it to attention. Not always unfortunate enough to bring something that is valuable, but I don't believe it's totally without a value. And to Asia.
Don't know what we can do with it, Wes. It's a little too foreign for us. The major motivation of the TechNet is to give people enthusiasm, to allow them to explore their curiosity, particularly in subject of
radio, wireless, computers, and related subjects. And right now, I'm pretty sure we're getting into chemistry. I, for one, am very light in chemistry. It's just not one of my areas that I know an awful lot about. Graphene I see as having a lot of capability, nanotechnology, a lot of capability. But the fact that somebody has a patent doesn't necessarily mean it has value. Can cannabis really be used for energy storage? I think that's part of what the patent is saying. It sounds like a hypothesis. Is there any evidence saying that it's true? Can hemp and cannabis store energy much better than other materials that have been used to date? I'm having a little trouble believing that, as you can tell. Over to US, K2RIW.
Yes. It looks like a hypothesis, but a application for the semiconductor of this material is not the former. And application for energy storage might be quite interesting, because everybody has a battery and uses batteries. My question to you would be, because we have 2 minutes left, if you have two beams of electrons and you crisscross them, what would be the total energy in cubic volume in the cross section of it?
Don't think I know. Electrons are so darn small. They've got such extremely strong electrostatic repulsion capability that you've got to do heroic things in order to get them to sit close to each other in the beam of a traveling wave tube or in a particle accelerator. So just to say you've got two beams of electrons, you've got them crisscrossing and they're going to do something, I don't know if that's true. And again, it's not an area I know much about. So here was K2RIW.
I'm going to ask John. You have two beams of electrons, and then they are crisscrossing. And that point of where those two beams cross each other, would you have a double energy in it?
I don't think so, Wes, because you're now getting to the de Broglie wave. And that deals with whether they come spin up, spin down, whether they are identical, if they both have their magnetic fields pointing in the same direction. They cannot occupy the same place. They can occupy the same place only if the spins are in reverse. That's where you can have two electrons traveling in the same plane. But added energy, I don't think so. I mean, not more than the two combined. You can't say that because those two are going to give you four times the energy. No, I don't think that works out with the de Broglie wavelength.
Hey guys, I'm going to send you the Ukrainian patent. And this is not that much of a patent. It's real, really good stuff. And I would be happy to even some help in just reading it. And thank you very much for listening to it, and I'm waiting for your response to it. Thank you very much, guys. It's 2:01. Have a good night, and it was a pleasure to be with you. See ya.
Can we take before the repeater goes off?
Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, I just wanted to say thank you to everybody, because some of my problems... I did find that tubing, that aluminum tubing on TX.
CC2WGB. I want to thank everybody for joining the net tonight. We'll look forward to hearing from you again next week. CC2WGB. 2WGB, 736, West, ready in the net.